Ananda Vrindavan Champu, Chapter 19, The Gopi Gita. The hearts of all the birds and beasts burned when they heard the gopis' sweet, gentle voices crying in grief. The weeping of the gopis as they glorified the good qualities of their beloved sounded like a graceful song to attract the hearts of all moving and non-moving beings. The sound of their soft crying distilled the essence of love and separation. Sympathizing with their sorrow, the musical notes, rhythms, and modulations personified entered their hearts and produced a song. The gopis said, "O beloved, the shelter of Lakshmi, since the day you appeared, you have been the center of attraction in Vrindavan. In the very place where the inhabitants became happy due to your appearance, how can your lovers experience such persecution? Why did you abandon us after we fell in love with you and dedicated ourselves solely to you? O beloved, be merciful and please show yourself to us." The gopis, forlorn over not finding their beloved Krishna, held the following fanciful conversation with him in his absence. The gopis imagined Krishna saying, "Why didn't you search for me and find me by force?" The gopis, "We search for you on every path, in every forest and bower, and under every tree and creeper until we had no more strength. Please appear before us and give pleasure to your followers." Krishna speaking, "What have I done to make you so sad?" Gopis speaking, "O beloved, you have pierced our hearts with the sharp arrows of your glances." Krishna speaking, "What is wrong if a witty man just glances at some women?" Gopis speaking, "We are losing our lives at the expense of your joking. You are killing the maidservants who have given themselves to you freely without any price. If it is your intention to kill us, then why did you repeatedly save us from all kinds of danger, poison water, forest fires, and rainstorms?" Krishna speaking, "You were just there among all the other inhabitants of Vrindavan whom I protected from those calamities." Gopis speaking, "Then why did you maintain our lives with the medicine of your sweet smile, making us forget your harsh instruction to go home? O independent Lord, we cannot see any reason other than your own pleasure in doing such things. It seems the only way you can have fun is by killing us and bringing us back to life." Krishna speaking, "Killing is easy, but reviving the dead is very difficult." Gopis speaking, "It is easy for you to restore a person to life. For us who are at death's door, seeing you is life. Without seeing you, we have no life. For fun, you disappear from us and kill us, and then you reappear and bring us back to life. How astonishing! Though you were born in a family of cowards, you are not afraid of killing coward women. Even ordinary people take care of their family members and distant relatives." Krishna speaking, "Due to the prayers of Brahma, I have appeared as the Supreme Lord. Therefore, I do not belong to any particular family." Gopis speaking, "You should not tell lies about your own greatness. You did not appear due to Brahma's prayers for protection of the universe. If that is true, then why don't you protect us? For we are also within the universe." The gopis spoke like this due to the bewilderment caused by the intense pain of separation from Krishna. Gopis speaking, "O Lord, you release men from the fear of material existence and fulfill the desires of those who love you. O lover, please place your soft lotus hand, which is caressed by the goddess of fortune, on our heads. You like to break the pride of your followers. You destroy the grief of Braja's people. Your smile shatters the false pride of your devotees. So please accept us as your maidservants and show us your beautiful moon face. Your lotus feet destroy the sins of those who worship you. Those feet follow after the cows in the pastures and are marked with all auspicious symptoms. The effulgence of the jewels on Kaliya's hoods worships them with reverence. Please place them in our burning breasts. O Lord of our lives, your sweet voice and charming words have soothed our ears and enthralled our minds. Since we have worshipped you for a long time, please pour the nectar of your words into our hungry ears once again. O beloved, your face is washed by the nectar of your sweet smile. Without seeing you, we are drying up with grief. Please return and revive us with the nectar of your sweet red lips. It seems, however, that by taking the medicine that devotees use to counteract the severe pain of separation, our malady has become twice as bad. Every day, we gopis recollect our previous conversations with you. Words spoken by you are supposed to destroy all sin. They are the elixir of life, the object of praise by the best of poets, and the savior of persons suffering from the threefold miseries. But in our case, your words pain our ears, increase our sorrow and suffering, and act to slowly kill us. When one becomes attracted to you, your words bring both happiness and distress. Is this nectar or poison? Therefore, we cannot understand anything about your words. Krishna speaking, you criticize, but yet you enjoy. If I am such a person, then how can you enjoy? The gopi is speaking, your pastimes and speech are nectarian on the outside, but sharper than the sharpest razor within. Those who love you know this well. Though they know, they have fallen under the influence of your words. At first, your pastimes give happiness, but finally they produce sorrow. Now we understand that. O best of men, your sweet, loving glances, the intimate pastimes, and the confidential talks we enjoyed with you touched our hearts. But at the same time, they have brought us misery. O deceiver, you are devoid of love, yet we are filled with love. We have become heartbroken by your neglectful treatment. You do not have even a drop of love for us gopis who are saturated with love for you. If you had any love, then you can understand our suffering. We, on the other hand, cannot tolerate seeing you suffer even a speck of grief. When you leave Nandagon to herd the cows in the forest, our minds are disturbed with the thought that your feet, softer and more beautiful than a lotus, will be pricked by the rough grass and plants. Krishna speaking, many people walk on the forest path, so there is only pain for my feet? How do I understand this? This must all be in your mind. Gopi speaking, what to speak of hearing about and seeing you walk into the forest, just thinking about your feet, which are as soft as fresh lotus petals, and those sharp shoots of grass make us want to give up our lives. O gallant one, all day we think of your suffering in the forest. Such thoughts afflict us with pain just like an ulcer in the heart. At the end of the day, you repeatedly show us your attractive lotus face, covered with dark locks of hair and thickly powdered with dust raised by the cow's hooves. Unseen, Cupid suddenly enters our hearts, arouses lusty desires in our minds, and makes us go mad. Then we think that tonight our beloved will certainly come to our private chambers. All night long we dream of this, but upon waking we feel sorrow. Like this, you never give us happiness. We have always been friendly to you, but today, just for trying to invoke your love for even a short time, we have ended up with such lamentation. Your lotus feet are the treasure of those who surrender to you. They are the ornament of the earth, and in times of danger, they are the appropriate object of meditation. Please put your lotus feet upon our breasts. The small drops of perspiration on your feet are like honey in a flower. Your moon-like toenails are like stamens, and your toes are like delicate petals. Please place those lotuses on the Purnakumbha, full water pots, of our breasts. In this way, the gopis try to pacify the Lord and also reveal their desire to enjoy with the Lord. The gopis again speaking, O treasure of love, let us drink the nectar of your sweet lips, which enhances conjugal pleasure and vanquishes grief. Your flute has become famous by continually relishing that nectar which makes people forget all other attractions. One should not think the lips touched by the flute are contaminated leftovers. Honey, which is the remnants of the bees, is famous for alleviating fevers and is therefore never rejected in this world. In contrast to this, the gopis describe the intolerable pain they experience. The gopis speaking, When you go off to play in the forest during the day, one fraction of a second becomes like a millennium for us because we cannot see your beautiful, smiling lotus face. Even when we can eagerly gaze upon your elegant face, which makes the moon and the lotus look insignificant, the blinking of our eyes is like the destruction at the end of the yuga. Next, a complaint was spoken by the gopis who had been obstructed by their husbands, but then gave up their material bodies and received spiritual bodies to serve Krishna. Gopis speaking again. O best of men, just to see you, we have completely rejected our husbands, friends, and relatives. Who but a cheater like you would act so callously and abandon young women who come to see him in the middle of the night? Though we are clever, you perplex us. You did not protect any of us. Our minds are repeatedly bewildered as we think of the intimate talks we had with you in secret, feel the rise of lust in our hearts, and remember your loving glances, tender laugh, broad chest, and long arms. Thus we experience intense hankering to enjoy with you. You can save our self-respect while preserving your own spotless fame. The only purpose of your appearance on earth is to give bliss to the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So please destroy the affliction in our minds. With great difficulty you have rejected us just to give us more suffering. O Lord, your lotus feet are so soft that we hold them gently on our hard breasts, fearing that your feet will be hurt. Don't your tender lotus feet feel pain from the pebbles and sprouts of grass as you roam about in the forest? Krishna speaking. By touching my feet, didn't your hard breast become soft as well? The grass and gravel are also soft. I do not feel any pain from them. The gopis speaking. O beloved, if you say that, it must be true. It cannot be false, but your glance, even a thunderbolt, melts. But our minds are harder than a thunderbolt, so should our breasts not remain hard? You have responded to our hardness with equal hardness. Your mind is softer than a flower, but from association with our merciless minds, it has now become extremely hard. Through false praise, the gopis speak again about Krishna's lack of compassion. Gopis, it is very unjust that simultaneously you are murdering many women. Acting without reason always brings misfortune. When our life heirs try to leave, you obstruct them with great force. What mercy do you show? You give more misery than death itself, for you make us suffer continuously without letting us die. We remain alive due to your presence within our hearts. You act as an expert magician to suddenly appear in our hearts and prevent our life heirs from leaving. That is your trick. By disappearing externally, you try to vanquish our life heirs, and a moment later, you appear internally and prevent them from leaving. Still, you will not be able to save our lives, O Lord. Though we search for you, we could not find you. Our life heirs, angry with this, are now coming out to search for you. You have said, no one can attain me without my sanction. What then is the use of endeavor? If what you say is true, then we know very well that you will never grant such sanction. Therefore, stop appearing in our hearts and let our life heirs leave in search of you. The gopis speak reasonably to conclude their song of lamentation, the Gopi Gita. The gopis speaking, O Lord of our lives, when our life heirs leave to search for you, surely they will quickly find you. It is well known that the Lord never disregards his servant. Thus, having spoken in various charming ways to reveal the pain of their separation from Krishna, the doe-eyed gopis wept loudly in their desperation to reunite with their beloved. The sweetness of their voices, rivaling the song of the cuckoo, shattered the hearts of the trees and creepers. Standing nearby and pretending to be indifferent, the son of the king of Gokula could no longer tolerate their condition. The gopis loudly sang the glories of their beloved. For a moment they experienced extreme bliss, caught between the happiness of giving up their lives if Krishna did not come and the joy of regaining their lives if he did appear. Understanding their condition, Krishna reappeared before his greatest devotees, the beloved gopis of Vrindavan. Then Krishna, a smile on his lotus face, stood in front of the gopis like a feast of enjoyment to uproot their anguish. Krishna dispelled the darkness of the gopis' anger with a merciful glance from his reddish lotus eyes and the moonlight of his gentle smile. Krishna reappeared in order to enlighten them and make them forget the weeping and lamentation arising constantly in their hearts due to their sweetness, greatness, and gravity. Krishna came to fix their intelligence on his perfectly formed, beautiful body from the beginning of their meeting until the end. Merciful Krishna manifested before them to bathe their hearts in the ecstasy of rapturous love. Now they could regard their previous searching here and there for him in separation to be just a dream. Krishna replaced the emaciated bodies of the gopis, which had been burning by the fire of separation, with fresh, cool bodies full of pleasure. Krishna's return put their escaping life airs back in their proper places. To make them believe they had never heard the word separation, Krishna appeared so that he could embrace each one of the gopis simultaneously and to kiss their cheeks without even touching their sweet lips. Standing before them, the dearest friend of the gopis, wearing a swaying garland of forest flowers in a yellow garment, looked like a newly arrived Cupid. Krishna had not appeared from their hearts, from the forest, from the earth, and not from anywhere. He just stood there. Out of their affection for him, the gopis stared at him with excited, wide-open eyes. All the gopis looked as joyful as night-blooming lotuses at the sudden appearance of the full moon, or like youthful chatagi birds looking at new clouds arising after a long dry spell. Their hearts swelled in happiness like deer looking at an unexpected downpour on a blazing forest fire, or like the air of life re-entering a dead body. Forgetting all their pains as well as their own bodies, they stood up happily and eagerly approached Krishna. The gopis beckon for pleasure. One gopi grasped Krishna's lotus hands, another leading gopi placed his arms on her musk-scented shoulders, and one gopi, inclined to service, respectfully took his chewed betel in her hands, which served as a golden spittoon. One leading gopi, burning with desire, put his lotus feet on her budding breasts. Decorated with the fresh young leaves of his toes, her breast looked like a pair of auspicious golden water pots announcing the upcoming rasa dance. Standing at a distance, one gopi, besides herself with loving anger, bit her beautiful lips and glared at him with frowning eyebrows. While casting glances from her reddened eyes smeared with cudgel, it seemed that as if she shot arrows tipped with the poison of pride. Another gopi, with unblinking eyes, drank the honey of his lotus face, but even after deeply relishing its sweetness, she did not feel satisfied. Only when Krishna looked into her eyes did she become satisfied. One married gopi took the Lord through the aperture of her eyes and placed him in the temple of her heart. Then, fearing his departure, with her eyes closed and her bodily hair standing on end, she continuously embraced him within. Seeing Krishna standing in front of her, one gopi, like a golden flower bud, felt bashful, placed her hands down at her sides, and then shook and stretched her body. One gopi became agitated upon beholding the pleasing form of Cupid personified standing at a distance. Then her pride took the form of a champaka bow to aim at Krishna. One chakora-eyed gopi, in order to attract Krishna, interlocked her fingers and held them over her head. Shaking off her fatigue, she stretched her body. Her two arms framed her brilliant moon-like face decorated with a mild smile. One very bold gopi moved her hand around in a circle while snapping her fingers to rid herself of shyness. The effulgence emitting from her smile provided a pathway for the shyness to pass out of her body. Taking her braid in her flower petal fingers, one doe-eyed gopi tucked it between her breasts. Then she forcibly pressed her breasts together with her two arms while closing her eyes. Her hair stood on end as she embraced the braid in this way for some time. By this she indicated her desire to enjoy with Krishna. One lotus-faced girl, her forehead covered with perspiration due to the spread of ecstatic thrill bumps, joyfully gazed on a toy lotus flower and smelled it. Then, brushing away the bees gathering about, she affectionately kissed it. This gopi reveals the wonder, the pretense of remorse in the competition between rivals, and a request to kiss the lord that Madhurya Ras generates. One Jacora-eyed gopi held the shoulder of a friend with her arm while casting a sidelong glance at the face of her beloved. The sidelong glance is a sign of her bashfulness in attempting to conceal her real desire. Holding the gopi's shoulder reveals her desire to embrace Krishna. One gopi undid her hair and again rebound it while her glistening golden bangles chimed sweetly. In bewilderment, she thought her anger hid in her bound-up hair, and so she searched there to quell it. Her actions indicate a complaint after enjoying with the Lord, and a display of obstinacy from her proud nature. One gopi put her little finger in her left ear and scratched it while shaking her left arm. The jingling noise from her bangles sounded like a victory cry in the battle of love. One thin gopi, her bangles tinkling, aimlessly twirled a delicate lotus with her right hand. It appeared to be a giant whirlpool in the river of fresh beauty, whose sound announced victory in the battle of love. Due to the bliss from intense desire and the ecstatic anger arising from discovering Krishna's deceit, one gopi moistened all over with perspiration. As she trembled in the wind, the edge of her upper garment swayed back and forth. She looked like the personified flag of victory in the battle of love. One skillful gopi laughed loudly in order to catch Krishna's attention. It seemed like a shower of flowers from the creeper of desire growing within her, which had fallen down due to the force of the tempest of longing. Simply by seeing Krishna, one very young doe-eyed gopi cried profusely. It seemed her mind said, "O eyes, you have seen Krishna. The other senses, such as the ears, are not deriving such bliss, so I consider you fortunate." Then her mind, melting in love, pressed the two eyes of Krishna firmly in her embrace, causing her eyes to overflow with tears. One gopi, stunned by the sight of Krishna, stood like a golden statue. She defeated Krishna by having more good qualities than the best of lovers in the three worlds. The whole body of one gopi broke out in goosebumps like a kadamba tree blossoming from top to bottom. It seemed as if the arrows of Cupid that had entered her heart during separation from Krishna were extracted by a special mystic jewel known as Krishna's kiss. One doe-eyed gopi, perspiring in all her limbs, appeared like a golden lotus covered with drops of dew. It appeared that upon seeing the moon face of Krishna, the lord of afflicted life heirs, the moonstone of her mind had become liquid and oozed out from reflecting that moonlight. One gopi, her eyes darting hither and thither like a chakora bird and her body continually trembling from the sight of Krishna, looked like a champaka vine blowing in the wind. It seemed as if the elephant king of desire had entered her body to shake the earth of her heart with his mad rampage. One moon-faced gopi with a voice sweeter than a cuckoo suddenly lost her voice upon seeing Krishna. She resembled a melodious veena gone out of tune due to damp weather. One doe-eyed gopi pulled her crooked hair braid over her shoulder. While moving her eyes as if in fear of a snake, her eyebrows frowned. Then she threw back her braid with her veil and ran away. By this, she hinted that Krishna should place his arms on her shoulders. Seeing some bees flying in front of her, one gopi waved her hands playfully to shoo them away, and then gracefully covered her lips with the edge of her veil. This revealed her desire for Krishna's kiss. On seeing the face of her beloved, one lotus-eyed gopi did not speak, move away, nor show any signs of bliss. She bent her head to indicate, "I know who you are." Being angry that Krishna had come to give her more suffering, she peered at him with reddish eyes. Feeling jealous, she placed her folded hands above her head as an offering of respect before leaving him. One gopi looked furtively at Krishna as if to ignore him. while placing her left arm near the shoulder of her companion. To prevent Krishna from understanding her desire, she did not put her arm directly on her friend's shoulder. With a maudlin smile and her moving eyebrows shining in anticipation, she mumbled monosyllables. Though meaningless, these sounds held great meaning. The sounds indicated her pride, insult, jubilation, and yearning. In a mood of humility and adoration, one gopi, her bangles tinkling, fanned the lord of her life with the edge of her upper garment. Due to experiencing ecstatic emotions, the cloth fell from her hand, yet she continued to wave her empty hand. Lord of my life, how can you walk in the forest with your tender feet which are softer than lotus buds? Saying this, one gopi took Krishna's feet in her hands and massaged them. In these verses, the gopis display all the natural emotional states such as trembling, being stunned, scratching the ear, stretching the body, embracing braided hair, and smelling a toy lotus to indicate their desires for conjugal enjoyment. Being submerged in the joyous lake of eternal elegance, the gopis, though having bodies made of spiritual love, became even more beautiful on seeing Krishna. Even Saraswati, what to speak of the less intelligent Brahaspati, could not describe their natural attractiveness, which was filled with a powerful, variegated, and worshipable swelling sweetness. Revealing itself in delicious emotional states, this nectarian sweetness easily brought Krishna under its control. For harvesting his highest enjoyment, the son of the king of Vrindavan broadcast a sweet mood in all directions. Then Krishna, the delightful crown jewel of all lovers, arrived on the bank of the Yamuna. The pleasurable sparkling sands and the streams of soothing moonlight resembling the brilliance of liquid silver provided the perfect setting. The bees hummed a gentle tune. The soft southern breeze, like a virtuoso, taught the blue and red lotuses how to dance. Krishna looked like the full moon surrounded by the stars of the blissful gopis who displayed the height of noble character. Completely imbued with all attractive qualities, the gopis were embodiments of Krishna's internal potency. The pleasurable minds of the gopis swelled with currents of pride, greed, and jubilation arising from the waves of their youthful exuberance. With a keen desire to have Krishna as their husband, the fortunate Shrutichari gopis, acquiring bodies suitable for that enjoyment, finally attained the fulfillment of their desires. Their heartache vanquished by the ecstasy of seeing Krishna, the Nichasiddha gopis, like Radha, acted as if unaware of their own eternally exalted positions and thought of themselves in the same way. The soft breezes cooled the bank of the Yamuna and artistically swayed the lotus petals, which were embraced by their lovers, the bees. The gopis, who were expert in amorous pastimes, arranged a seat for their friend Krishna with their shawls that were as white as milk droplets or jasmine flowers, and fragrant with the kumkum powder from their breasts. While smiling gently, they said, "Let us sit here." Krishna happily sat on those attractive asanas. They far surpassed the seats arranged within the lotus hearts of the great masters of mystic perfection. Those seats defeated the opulence of the costly jeweled throne offered by the goddess of fortune of the three worlds, or the base created by Ananta Shesh, the turtle incarnation, or any other supporting energies. Sitting on those cloth seats spread on the sands of the Yamuna, Krishna, with his broad chest, appeared like a prince enthroned by the goddess of fortune in the kingdom of enchanting pastimes made from the rarest jewels in the three worlds. While sitting on the bank of the Yamuna, which flowed by with waters as black as ink, Krishna and the gopis looked like the moon encircled by the stars. One group of gopis, adept at inducing the zenith of ecstatic ras, massaged Krishna's hands and feet with their loving lotus hands. Their soft hands showed drops of perspiration produced by the blows of sorrow caused by their unfathomable attachment. The fear, pride, and madness that recently attacked their hearts had disturbed their life airs. So while massaging Krishna's feet, the gopis sought relief by asking him some intimate questions. Speaking in sweet, gentle voices, they indirectly referred to their condition through a series of questions and answers. The wordplay of Krishna and the gopis. The gopis speaking, "Who has spotless intelligence? Kamala Bhuti." Krishna replied, "He who has a soft mind, Ye Kamala Bhuti." The gopis asked, "Who is the greatest? Ke Mahita." Krishna answered, "One who is expert in love, Ye Kamahita." The gopis asked, "What is wasteful? Ki Apachaya." Krishna stated, "Intense anger, Kopa Chaya." The gopis asked, "What is sweet? Madhura Ki." Krishna answered, "The full moon in spring is sweet, Madhuraka." Hearing Krishna's clever answers, the gopis became disturbed, so squinting their eyes, they continued the dialogue. The gopis stated, "Although we are overcome by love, your answers reveal that you have a harsh mind and are filled with anger. We can plainly see that in your dealings. When Radha just said something trivial, you went away in anger. Today's full moon of the autumn season is much brighter than the full moon in spring." Then the gopis asked, "Who is strong? Ke Bala Bhaja." Krishna answered, "The person who just worships. Ke Bala Bhajaha." The gopis asked, "Who is learned? Ke Santa Eva." Krishna answered, "Those who are not disturbed and remain happy always. Ke Santaha." The gopis asked, "Who can enjoy the highest ras? Kasara rasa vilas velocity." Krishna answered, "The lotus which stays in the lake, Kasara rasa vilasa eva." In this series, Krishna asks questions and the gopis answer. So Krishna asks, "Who is to be worshipped?" The gopis answer, "He who is filled with ras." Krishna asked, "Who is filled with ras?" The gopis answered, "He who is the shelter of prema." Krishna asked, "What is prema?" The gopis answered, "That which knows no separation." Krishna asked, "What is separation?" The gopis answered, "That by which one can no longer live. In separation from us, you did not show any grief at all. Therefore, you must be without prema. Because you are without prema, you are without ras." Krishna asked, "What is sorrow?" The gopis answered, "Separation from a dear one." Krishna asked, "What is the dearest thing?" The gopis answered, "That which is rare and desired." Krishna asked, "What is the rarest thing?" The gopis answered, "What cannot be achieved even by any practice." Being the rarest, most desired, and hardest to attain, Krishna is the dearest object for the gopis. The gopis felt sorrowful in separation from Krishna. In this way, by playing with the various meanings of words, the gopis wove a fantastic fabric of bright syllables, colors, by moving the shuttle of clever questions and answers. Still, even while worshipping Krishna, they felt somewhat angry due to the intoxication of love. So very carefully they revealed their minds to the breaker of the cart. The gopis said, "O joy of our eyes, now please give us answers on one topic. Some people reciprocate the love only of those who show love toward them, while others show love even to those who are indifferent or inimical. Yet others will not show love toward anyone. What person is being described in these three statements, aware of yellow garments? You are the most knowledgeable among all moving and non-moving entities. Please consider and give your reply." The son of the king of Vrindavan, amazed at the gopis' effulgence and the respect they had given him, understood that this question, which revealed their great pride, had arisen from the jealousy caused by their unbroken love. Knowing this, Krishna looked at them very sweetly with sidelong glances. Then, just to satisfy them, he gave a humorous answer imbued with a special taste that could revive a person from death. Krishna said, "O dear, slender-waisted gopis, People who show affection for each other only to benefit themselves are actually selfish. They have no true friendship. Indeed, if they did not expect benefit for themselves, they would not reciprocate. Some people are compassionate toward all souls, or like parents, naturally affectionate. They lovingly serve even those who fail to reciprocate with them. O women with beautiful eyebrows, there are individuals who are self-satisfied, Atmarama, materially fulfilled, Aptakama, or by nature ungrateful, Akritagya, or simply envious of superiors, Guru Druha. Such persons will not love even those who love them. After saying this, Krishna laughed when he saw the gopis casting looks of disbelief at each other rather than looking directly at him. Then Krishna said, O greatly intelligent ones, filled with pure friendship, what kind of upside-down questions are you asking? I cannot have offended anyone by my answers. O doe-eyed gopis, because I do not immediately reciprocate the affection of those who worship me, nor do I show compassion to those who are indifferent, your first two clever questions do not apply to me. I am also situated beyond the four types of people given in my answer to your third question. I am not Atma Rami, completely self-satisfied and absorbed in meditation, for I have been attracted by your piteous conversations. Because of this, I am also not Aptakami, free from any desires. For the above reason as well, I am not a Guru Druhi, a cruel person hating those who help me. For this reason too, I am not an Akritagya, an ungrateful person. If you want to know why I did not respond to you when you worship me, then please listen attentively to my answer and hold it in your hearts forever. I do not immediately respond or show myself to those who worship me because I want to intensify their loving attachment to me. They then become absorbed in remembering me just like a poor man who has gained some wealth and then lost it. He cannot think of anything else. As the lotus flower does not fade in the sunlight, the gopis do not wither in the presence of Krishna's statements. Being bound in love by the wearer of the flower garland, the lotus-eyed gopis with pure faces just stood there without revealing a speck of their heart's pain. Lotus-eyed Krishna said, What we have spoken is for the ordinary person. It does not apply to you who are worshipable by all. One who has already achieved the limit of perfection cannot possibly go further. There is no one superior to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and there is no love greater than yours. O doe-eyed gopis, just as rock candy is the final and finest product from processing sugarcane juice, similarly, can there be anything higher than the attraction that you have attained for me? Though separated from your vision, I always remain within you. If that had not been so, then your life heirs, which desire to leave your bodies, would not have been appeased. Please excuse whatever faults I have committed by acting too boldly. If sometimes the cloud does not serve the lightning, clouds sometimes appear without lightning, does that mean that the lightning will disrespect the cloud? Sometimes the obstacles created by the lover produce a new, more favorable situation for the beloved. Though the intense heat of the sun produces sweat, the lotuses always feel bliss to their very core by the same heat. Krishna delivered a dexterous display of words simply to cover his own defeat. Then in a choked voice, Krishna spoke the highest truth. O gopis, I am not able to repay my debt for your spotless service even within a lifetime of Brahma. Therefore, please let your own glorious deeds be your remuneration.
Jana Sa Pratidu.